Thanks for joining us. 9 o'clock. Jim along with the Buckeye Boy from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios, the most trusted name in automobiles. Preseason game number 2 this Saturday, right here on the team. Broncos at the Buffalo Bills. Countdown to kickoff at 9, kickoff at 11 with Dave Logan and Rick Lewis. When we got back from our trip, I did watch a little bit of the game with Steve Levy, Chad Brown, and Ryan Harris.
Mm-hmm.
They were good. Both those guys, both Chad and Ryan, are working. Chad for Compass, and Ryan does stuff for Westwood One. He's on the Notre Dame radio network as well. I'd love to see Ryan Harris get a chance to work alongside Dave Logan.
Yeah, absolutely.
At some point, that'd be nice. I thought Ryan did an outstanding job. That Chad was great as well. I like Steve Levy a lot, so mm-hmm. Immediately I like the broadcast because I do like Steve Levy, but it was great. A couple guys that have been on our show. I'll have to reach out to Chad again, see if we can get Chad back on at some point.
Fair amount of time.
But it was great hearing those guys working the Broncos-Cowboys game. All right, so Broncos to the Bills this Saturday here on the team. What are the things you're going to be watching with the starters, for the most part, not going to be playing? Probably, I don't see any scenario where we see Russell Wilson against the Bills. Especially, they're going to play their starters right now. I don't think we're going to see that happen.
Yeah, Von Miller's going to take anybody out. It probably should be Josh Johnson and Brett Rypien.
So, what are you going to be focusing on with this game, preseason game number 2? Watching the offensive line, see if that improves from what we saw against the Cowboys, particularly running the football where they struggled. The development of a guy like Damari Mathis, who I've been very impressed with. The rookie out of Pitt at the cornerback spot could be a guy that maybe at some point supplants Ronald Darby alongside Patrick Surtain somewhere down the road. So if you got some thoughts on that today, text or call us 970-242-1340. From Dylan, looking to watch the wide receivers and also how they respond with the 11 o'clock window on Saturday. Look at offensive play calling. My text thing is deciding to give me the circle of death here.
Let's see. You look at offensive play calling, actually extending the field, blocking, defense flying around, energy on the field, and attitude.
Thank you.
Because it was Buzz, I believe, former Fruit of Monument principal Buzz Schoenbeck, when I was out there.
Oh yeah, okay. Hello, Buzz.
Yeah,
I haven't seen Buzz in a while.
Those gray hairs aren't mine, from me. I wasn't even on campus enough to cause gray hairs. So,
really, you never had to go see Buzz up in the office? Not one time.
No. A handful of times to Miss Cuda. At the time, yeah, but not. Not straight to the big man's office.
I'd say most of my youthful transgressions were, like, high school. I was a little bit smarter, I guess. It's like,
yeah,
things that I might have done that would have been worthy of a visit to the principal didn't get nailed for them. We'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But. Elementary school, yeah.
Spent a fair amount of time in Mr. Oga's office at Appleton, yeah.
Yeah, spent some time there. Board of Education, a little bit. There was the big paddle, and then there was the ping pong paddle, depending on the infraction.
I didn't get paddled, per se, but I had more visits there in only 2 years at the school than I probably should have.
Yeah, see, I come from an era where...
You could smack some
kids
around.
That was still okay. That was... And obviously, for a long time, and... Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's not been
the
case.
In the 90s, you could still threaten. You just couldn't actually.
You could actually act upon it.
The bigger threat was they had the phone number, right? They had the home phone number. That was the bigger threat. Well, I was more scared of that.
My problem, though, was my mom worked at Appleton.
Yeah.
She was a school cook there, so mom was right there.
When I was there, too.
Yeah, so it's like there was no need in,
right.
Other than calling down to the kitchen to say, hey, little Jimmy's been an idiot again.
Yeah.
We're having a little confab up here. Mm-hmm. You might want to participate in this.
The problem is there were a couple of teachers still at Appleton that went to various social functions with my mother.
Ah, I see.
You know, and your mom and my grandma attended the same church.
And Mrs. Crawford?
I don't believe Crawford, but Courier around there too, I think, maybe one or the other. But yeah, there was a few that a couple of them I didn't even know. Because there were some stuff that...
Sure.
I know this person didn't know about that. Yeah. How did you find out? But, yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Spent a lot of time.
And then, Jinx Everett was my junior high principal, and, yeah.
I don't even remember who it was.
Had to see him a couple times.
At Fruita Middle, so.
Yeah. So we got one from... But good morning, Buzz.
Yes.
As we take our tour...
A little detour.
To the past.
Yeah.
Of times we had to go see the principal. Let's see. Mike in Scottsdale. Good morning, Mike. Good morning, muchachos. Does this sound like a 5-win team or a 7-win team? The defensive line has depth. The defensive backfield will be by committee. There is no one like Broussard, but the running back room has depth and will also be by committee. It sounds a lot closer to a 3 than a 7. There is simply not enough talent there to compete in a Power 5 conference. Talking with Mark Johnson, voice of the Buffalo, 7 o'clock hour. Mike's referencing some of the comments that Mark made about the Buffs and what he's seen. They're picked last in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And I think there's a reason for it. Hopefully, offensively, they have to be better. They've got to help their defense out this year. They can't put up historically bad passing numbers like they did last year. And that's why JT Shrout's going to have the chance to be this team's starting quarterback. It's good that Brendan
should,
Lewis,
yeah.
It's good that Brendan Lewis is improving. But we're talking about a team last year that struggled to get 100 yards passing in a game at times. At the Division I college football level, that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many 3-and-outs last year, and it put the defense in such a bad spot. Because that was a pretty good defensive group with Nate Lammon and Carson Wells. Those corners, Christian Gonzalez. I mean, that secondary just got decimated by transfers.
Yeah.
Absolutely decimated. They're going to miss Gonzalez in a big, big way moving forward. I agree with Mark on that.
Couple of updated numbers from the Big Ten media rights. CBS and NBC paying around $350 million per year for the Big Ten. And so the Big Ten's going to make over $8 billion, so more than $1 billion a year over the course of that deal.
And so you're wondering, okay, how does Notre Dame feel about this with NBC?
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, they've had NBC all to themselves for a very long time, and at first I thought, well, maybe they're not going to be happy about that. I'm going to share a network with now the Big Ten. But I was reading that their AD Jack Swirebuck made the comment that he thinks this is really good because it'll help promote college football coverage, promote coverage of Notre Dame, because there will be Big Ten coverage, a primetime game on NBC. So they actually think it's going to be a good thing, not a bad thing.
Because and NBC doesn't have Notre Dame exclusively, because Notre Dame is going to be on ABC and ESPN. They get some of those games, or, you know, a lot of their primetime games are going to be on, you know, Disney owned. So having more college football on NBC is going to make NBC more known for, instead
Absolutely.
Of all they have is Notre Dame
and the Bayou Classic.
Now it's going to be Big Ten football. You're going to be more apt to keep NBC on all day than you would be ABC, ESPN. If you're a Big Ten fan,
right.
If you're watching Big Ten football, and you know, you already have most of the teams there either have a hate watch or a mild interest in Notre Dame. You're going to watch it anyway. You're going to keep it on. So I think that does help Notre Dame more than it hurts it, because instead of just being, you know, NDBC, Notre Dame Broadcasting Channel, it's going to have all these other teams on it as well.
And we're talking about one of the biggest conferences in college football. It's not the Pac-12. No offense to Pac-12, but it's not. It's the 1A, 1B.
Yeah.
with the SEC as far as, I mean, you're getting a product that people are going to watch.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be locked into. It's a smart move by NBC, no doubt about it. All right, 9-10. One more from Mike in Scottsdale. Here's a snapshot of the talent level in Boulder. No players drafted in the 2022 NFL draft. Currently, there are 15 former Buffs on NFL rosters. This number will likely go down by the first regular season game. Six out of those 15 were undrafted free agents. 10 Buffs have been drafted since 2015. There were 10 Buffs drafted in 1995 alone. It does show what the decline of Colorado Buffalo's football.
Yeah.
Over the last 20-plus years. There have been some good moments, the rise, Mike McIntyre, and they won the South.
And then the continued fall since.
Yeah. And Philip Lindsay on that team. Let's see, 9-11, Jim along with the Buckeye boy. Okay, so we have the Broncos playing at Buffalo on Saturday. Still want your thoughts about what you're going to be kind of focused in on for that game coming up this Saturday, preseason game number two. Referenced this earlier this morning that we're going to talk about this hour. Austin Mock works for The Athletic. He writes a lot of stories about sports betting, but he's also very into advanced analytic simulations and advanced analytics in general. So what he did is he ran a simulation on the teams in the AFC West, which he's calling the Division of Death, as you referenced, kind of a play on the World Cup.
The Group of Death.
The Group of Death situation, the moniker that they use for the World Cup. So in breaking this down, he said he used his NFL projection model in simulating the NFL season 100,000 times to take a deep dive into the AFC West and how likely each team is to win the division as well as make the playoffs in 2022. So we'll start out with the defending champs. If you're going to be the king, you got to beat the king. And Kansas City is the king of the AFC West. Austin Mock's odds to win the AFC West for the Chiefs, 44.1%. He also has the BetMGM odds to win the AFC West. It's 38.5%. His odds on the Chiefs making the playoffs, 77.3%. BetMGM, 69.2%. And so he has, if things go right, and he talks about Patrick Mahomes and moving forward without Tyreek Hill, this offense, because that's a big piece to lose in Tyreek Hill. That Mahomes, he says, Mahomes and the Chiefs figure out a more efficient play style when not being blitzed and earn their second ring in four seasons. Mahomes was blitzed just 14.8% of dropbacks in 2021 as per Pro Football Focus. And so Mahomes averages 7 yards per attempt while not being blitzed.
Hey, he's one of those quarterbacks to where more time is not necessarily his friend, right?
Right.
Having plenty of time and, you know, waiting for routes to develop and the whole thing. He's at his best when you bring a linebacker and Travis Kelce has the seam. You bring a corner and, you know, Tyreek Hill is one-on-one with a safety or whatever. He's...
where he can create.
He's much better just drawing it up in his head. When you drop 7 or 8, and make him stand there and run routes and do the whole thing, his numbers drop.
And so dropping extra guys into coverage, against those, you know, nickel dime packages, those situations, he's not particularly good. And that's an area that's going to have to get better. And maybe it does get better because Tyreek Hill isn't there. Because he has Scantlin, he has Juju Smith-Schuster.
More balance.
There's more... or balance on the field other than just looking at Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill.
Kelce, Hill, Bolt.
Yeah.
You know, that's, he's got more options.
And so maybe that will make him better. But maybe he's also looked at what his Achilles heel has been, and that's been reading coverages. And that could be something. I know reading a piece, Andy Reid has actually said he's been quite excited about this season, about, you know, not that he liked losing Tyreek Hill, but it has challenged him to kind of come up with different ways, working with new personnel in regard to that Chiefs offense and how to make it maybe more versatile, maybe more tougher to defend than it was previously with Tyreek Hill, which is, you know, kind of hard to believe, right?
Right.
But they do have, at least the sense is, and Andy Reid's excited about this, maybe they can spread the ball around a little bit more than they previously have with what they have now.
There's over a 50-catch difference between your leading wide receiver and your second wide receiver. Yes, Travis Kelce's in the middle there, but Tyreek Hill had 111. Mecole Hardman had 59 catches last year. If you can get, you know, it just completely blanked on his name, the former Packer, the Valdez-Scantling.
Marquise Valdez-Scantling, yeah.
You know, if you can get him and Hardman and, you know, maybe a couple of the other guys to where there's 70 and 70 and a 60 and you have a little bit more balance, the Chiefs are probably going to win the division.
So the other side of the ball has been a problem for Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of cornerback play.
Just watch the AFC divisional game.
Absolutely. And if Frank Clark, according to Austin Mock, if he can get back to what he was before,
mm-hmm.
when he played with the Niners, that Frank Clark becomes a really good pass rusher. George Kolaftis, the rookie, is the impact pass rusher they expect him to be. Chris Jones, who's super consistent on that defensive front. Danny Shelton, former Brown and Danny Shelton. If those guys can start to put pressure on teams, then that defense is going to be better. They're going to miss the Honey Badger, though. I think they're going to miss Tyrann Mathieu as a guy that was he was a guy that led that defense.
He would keep guys in the right spot or put guys in the right spot. There's plenty of video over the last couple of years where the Honey Badger is, you know, apoplectic at other defenders of Kansas City just completely being out of position. Missing him's going to hurt, but they lost all four starters back there. I only think two of them are downgrades. A couple of them are going to be upgrades.
Right. And so he also says if things go wrong, that if this defense doesn't improve, doesn't get better from back to front, that's going to be a problem for this team.
Mm-hmm.
Could it be that Tyreek Hill was such a big playmaker that the other guys we've talked about, Marquise Valdez-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster and Sky Moore, that they're good players, but they're no replacement for the big play capability, the speed that Tyreek Hill possesses? So those are if things go wrong. And he says, my model gives the Chiefs a 6.5% chance to win the Super Bowl, which is fifth best in the NFL with his projections. So let's go move quickly to the Chargers here. Chargers, his odds to make to win the AFC West, 27.1. BetMGM's odds to win the West, 28.6. His odds to make the playoffs, 63.8. BetMGM, 61.5. If things go right for the Chargers, their defense goes from 27th in EPA/play to a league average unit or better, could take them to their first Super Bowl. They've made some very impressive additions with Khalil Mack up front, the team with Joey Bosa, J.C. Jackson in the secondary. Then, of course, you got Justin Herbert on the other side of the football, one of the young rising quarterbacks in the National Football League. And some of Herbert's numbers through analytics have actually put him above Tom Brady. And we know how good Brady's been and certainly how good Brady was last year. He has a model projection. The Chargers offense will be the fifth best offense in the league. So that's if things go right. If things go wrong, and this is where it comes back to the defensive side of the football.
Mm-hmm.
What if the Chargers defense doesn't feed off the addition of Khalil Mack and J.C. Jackson and others? What if that defense doesn't get dramatically better?
They're going to be in the same position as the Chargers are.
Yeah, Chargers
underperforming, or Chiefs are underperforming.
So he has his Chargers Super Bowl projection, 4.4 chance to win the Super Bowl, 10th best in the NFL. So we move on to the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, that's right.
And so for the Broncos, his odds to win the AFC West, 19.9. BetMGM's odds for the Broncos to win the West, 27.8. His odds for them to make the playoffs, 54.8%. BetMGM's odds, 58.3%. So this is if things go right for the Broncos. The Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler are healthy, productive. They fill the void, the loss of Tim Patrick. And they click well, particularly on the deep balls with Russell Wilson. Move to the defensive side, that Randy Gregory, that his addition helps the Broncos pass rush. You got to have a good season from Bradley Chubb as well. So that the feeling is that with Gregory and Chubb, that Denver has the outside linebacker talent, the edge rush talent, to maybe make them a top 10 defense. So here's if things go wrong. Patrick Surtain the second regresses. I don't think that's going to happen. But never say never. He's not very high on Kareem Jackson. Didn't feel like that he was particularly effective at the strong safety spot last year. He likes Justin Simmons a lot. But he feels like maybe if Kareem Jackson doesn't play well, that puts a lot of pressure on Simmons. It's kind of Denver. It seems like the feeling from I get from Austin Mock here is that I want to say he has more faith in the Broncos defense than the Chargers or the Chiefs, but I kind of get that vibe here. It feels like they're in a better place with their defense, that the drop off may that they're going to be a top 15, maybe a top 10 defense. Chargers, Chiefs have that potential. Certainly the Chargers do with who they've added. But he feels like that the Broncos are their ceiling to their basement isn't as dramatic as the other two when it comes to their defense.
Right. And his question marks about the defense, you know, if things go wrong, are kind of minor.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's if this great player is not as great, or if this great player is not as great, not is this guy going to be any good in this scheme? Is this guy going to be any good at this position? So the question marks are fewer and farther between for the Broncos defense than the other two we've talked about so far.
So his Super Bowl projection for the Broncos, 3.5% chance to win the Super Bowl, 15th best in the league. So he has it Chiefs, Chargers, Broncos.
Yeah.
In terms of finishing right in the AFC West. So now, obviously, the Raiders are last in his grouping here. His odds for them to win the AFC West, 8.9%. BetMGM's odds to win the West, 13.3%. His odds to make the playoffs, 32.8%. BetMGM's odds, 35.7%. So they think a little more of the Raiders than Mock does. Things go right. Derek Carr, Devontae Adams, they rekindle that college relationship, and they become one of the most lethal combos in the league. Derek Carr has played well the last few years. He has become one of the more consistent quarterbacks in the league.
Mm-hmm.
May not always be spectacular, flashy, but he's become very consistent. And to go along with Darren Waller at the tight end spot, who's emerged as one of the best receiving tight ends in the league, I love Hunter Renfro. He's a Raider, and I hate that. But
he's a good player.
But he's a really, really good player. Great slot receiver. And for Derek Carr, they make a good point here. Austin Mock does. He hasn't had a true top wide receiver during his NFL career. And he now has the guy that many people think is at the very tippy top in Devontae Adams. How big of a difference will that make for the Raiders? It could be significant. They talk about things go wrong, and it seems like with three of the four teams that in this division, there are concerns about the defensive side of the football, and the Raiders are right there. That the defense ranked 26th in EPA dropback last year. And though they were a playoff team last year, if this defense does not improve, and they've got, obviously, two really talented edge rushers, Max Crosby and Chandler Jones, that you know, they've got, look, they're going to be tested because you're facing Danger Russ, Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes, just in your division.
Mm-hmm.
Those two guys have to be productive for a little hoodie on the defensive side in terms of the pass rush. Offensive line wasn't very good last year. And so that is a concern that, you know, Colton Miller was great last year, but Alex Leatherwood on that offensive line, granted, that is one of the poor players in the league last year at the tackle spot, former first-round guy out of Alabama. And so there's concerns about their offensive line. So his projection for the Raiders going to a Super Bowl, 1.7, which ranks them 21st in the league. So, to sum it up here, Denver's very much in the thick in this. If you look at these projections, for all that they're worth, right? Because this is all all out there in computer-generated simulations. It's not factored in guys that get hurt, guys that regress, all these kind of things. But it does show that the gap between the Broncos to the Chiefs, at least from this anyway,
slimmed a bit.
They've cut into that. And it definitely, I agree, it's going to be the division of death. It's going to be a lot of fun, but it's going to be a brutal AFC West with four teams that are all very much capable of, even the Raiders, they're capable of winning this division. It's as close as the AFC West has been in a very long time. Going back, of course, to the recent dominance by the Chiefs, to the Broncos' dominance before that in the division. Though we're talking, it's been probably, what, 15 years? That the division has been this tightly bunched and everybody's that good. And we've never seen the AFC West look like this when it comes to quarterbacks.
Not top to bottom.
Some real talent, really great Hall of Fame quarterbacks in this division over the years, but not like this. Not where you've got Mahomes, who'll be a Hall of Famer someday. Derek Carr might very well end up being a Hall of Famer. Herbert, certainly on that trajectory, right? Russ will be a Hall of Famer. You've got two guys that are going to be Hall of Famers and two other guys that could very well end up being there. Quarterbacking teams in this division. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. All right, 927. Jim along with the Buckeye Boy today. Text or call us 970-242-1340. We'll take a break. NBA released the schedule yesterday. We'll hit on some of the highlights for the Nuggets schedule coming up next on the Jim Davis Show.
First of all, it's hilarious.
Warped, twisted individuals. Yes.
Yeah! The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team.
.932, thanks for joining us. Jim along with the Buckeye Boy from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios, the most trusted name in automobiles. Little programming information for you that coming up next Thursday, we're going to devote the majority of the morning to our high school football preview show that we're going to do. We'll still have Mark Johnson on. We'll go in the garage of NASCAR Fred, but we're going to bring you interviews with the area football coaches, some of the players as well for those teams. And that'll be coming up next Thursday on the Jim Davis Show, our special high school football preview show, taking a look at the teams across the Western Slope. So make sure you join us for that. All the Valley teams, Highway 50, North Fork as well, Cedar Edge. So looking forward to getting into the high school football season starting next week here on the Team Sports Network. And also don't forget Montrose and Delta football over on the Monkey starting next week with that Palmer Ridge game as the Montrose Redhawks take on Palmer Ridge August 26th. All right, 9:34, Jim along with the Buckeye Boy. Things that you're going to keep your eye on with the Broncos and the Buffalo Bills this Saturday preseason game number 2, and it'll be right here on the Team with countdown to kickoff at 9, kickoff at 11. So yesterday the schedule came out from the NBA. And we've known for a little while, because it got leaked, that the Broncos are going to play on Christmas Day against the Rams, but they'll be joined on Christmas Day by their hardwood brethren, the Denver Nuggets, who will host the Phoenix Suns on Christmas Day. So the Nuggets, they end up getting 8 ESPN games, 7 TNT games, 1 ABC game, and 12 NBA TV games. So they're going to be on national TV 28 times when you have the back-to-back MVP, you tend to be on national broadcast quite a bit.
Yep. Just a note for those of you cord cutters or without altitude, those NBA TV games will be blacked out.
Yeah. So
while you don't have altitude, the Team Sports Network and TNT/ESPN will be where you find the Nuggets.
Exactly. So, and we're always a good place to go with Jason Kosmiski, by the way, calling the Nuggets, and Katie Wingy and Chris Dempsey and company. But the Nuggets will be on national TV 28 times. And so hopefully Jamal Murray, expect him to be back in the Blue Arrow in full force. Michael Porter Jr. as well, along with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and the other additions that the Nuggets have made, DeAndre Jordan in the offseason. So the Nuggets will open up the season against their Northwest Division rival, Utah. They'll play at Utah October 19th. And then 2 days later, on the 21st, they'll be on the national tube, ESPN, at Golden State, as they'll take on the defending NBA champions. So looking at some of the highlight games for the Nuggets, obviously the first game of the season's a big one at Utah, and then, like I said, a couple days later at Golden State. But January 1st, they'll host Boston. Boston went to Denver last season and blew out the Nuggets by 20 points in March. So a chance to get a little payback, hopefully, against the NBA championship runner-ups and the Boston Celtics. And hopefully the additions of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Bruce Brown will help from a defensive standpoint against Tatum and company and the Boston Celtics.
They get them Veterans Day in Boston, November the 11th.
They also have Memphis on December 20th. They had a 3-1 record against the Nuggets last year. So that's with Ja Morant, one of the really, you know, good teams in the Western Conference. One of those teams that the Nuggets are going to have to beat to get to the Western Conference Finals to get to their first ever NBA Finals.
Yeah. And you're going to get plenty of LeBron and plenty of the Clippers. You mentioned the 8 ESPN games, 2 against the Lakers, 2 against the Clippers.
Of course, LeBron signing that 2-year extension just yesterday.
Yep. So you get one game in each location against both teams.
And then you have the battle between Luka Doncic and Nikola Jokic.
Mm-hmm.
Couple of incredibly talented international players. Couple of guys that have yet to face each other in the playoffs, though. Maybe that will be in this 2022-2023 season. But kind of interesting, they've got Friday, November 18th, they're at Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Then November 20th, at Sunday, they're at Dallas again. So back-to-back, Nikola and Luka for you coming up.
Yeah, they played Dallas 3 times in the span of 18 days in November and December, and then they don't see him again until February. That double dip you're talking about with Dallas, then like 10 days later, they do the same thing with Houston, but at home. And then in December, back-to-back days at Sacramento, get the Kings on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, the 27th and the 28th. There's the three of those jumped out at me.
Yeah, you got Sunday,
with
February
a lot
5th.
Of the back-to-backs.
Yeah, you got February 5th at Minnesota. Then on the 7th, they're back home against Minnesota.
Yeah, so those jumped out at me a lot because that doesn't... It seems to be happening more and more, but it's still a little strange to see on the NBA schedule to have it kind of shake out that way.
All right, so don't forget Nuggets basketball this season.
San Antonio in November, so three different times. Yeah. They play the same team back-to-back in November.
So Nuggets basketball this fall right here on the Team Sports Network. All right, 9:39, and it's time for this day in sports history.
That's the story of the greatest sport moment in all of history.
It's time to take a trip back in time. It's this day in sports history.
All right, so for this day in sports history, we go to Larry Bird. It was on this day, 1992, that Larry Bird after 13 seasons, announced his retirement.
Kind of late in the process, isn't it? August?
Yeah. Did a lot of mulling around, checking out that back, thinking, maybe, okay, maybe it is time for me to be done. Let's see. We'll go back a few years before that. Go to 1964, the International Olympic Committee banned South Africa from competing in the Summer Games because of their apartheid policies. Also, 1994, South Africa is introduced for the first time in 36 years during the open ceremonies of the Commonwealth Games because they've been banned since 1958 because of apartheid. 1995, 13-year-old Dominic Mocianu becomes the youngest person to win the National Gymnastics Championships senior women's all-around title in New Orleans. Also on this day, 2000, Tiger Woods ties the 36-hole scoring record in the PGA Championship with a 5-under par 67 to take a one-stroke lead over an unheralded Scott Dunlap. Woods at 11-under 133 ties the mark for relation to par, last set by Mark O'Meara and Ernie Els in 1995. And that's this day in sports history. Coming up next, we'll go in the garage to NASCAR Fred, brought to you by Montrose Ford Nissan. But before we do that, we're going to talk about another motorsport, and that is Arena Cross this Saturday out at the Mesa County Fairgrounds. It's the Kicker Arena Cross Series that'll be out there racing at the fairgrounds. And got four tickets. If you have the answer to this question, there was a race back in the day known as the Super Bowl of Motocross. It was really the kind of the beginning of the Supercross series as we now know it in dirt bike racing and motocross and supercross racing. Where did they hold the Super Bowl of Motocross? An iconic stadium with a big-time Olympic connection to it. First correct answer, you win the four tickets to the Kicker Arena Cross, Mesa County Fairgrounds, this Saturday night, by the way. At the fairgrounds, going to be some great racing and some great action out there. So first correct answer, give me the stadium that they called the Super Bowl of Motocross back in the day. And you get those four tickets to the Kicker Arena Cross this Saturday. Text in your answer only, Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, 970-242-1340.
I'm the morning guy. I have a Facebook group, 16 members. Some call it a fan page. I don't know.
Oh, hell yeah.
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team.
Now, to anyone out there who wants to go fast, anybody.
I want to go fast.
Like an oval, then we're going to drive straight, and then we're going to be turning to the left.
Green flag, get ready to go in the air. Boogity, boogity, boogity. Let's go racing, boys.
All right, it's time to go in the garage with NASCAR Fred, brought to you by Montrose Ford Nissan. Not just a better dealership, pricing information, all that good stuff. Go to MontroseFordNissan.com. From the great state of Iowa, it's NASCAR Fred. Good morning, Fred. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning, Jim. Boy, this Kevin Harvick guy, I'm thinking he might amount to something in this sport, you know. It's funny because, you know, they're always calling Harvick Mr. Where Did He Come From? Right? Because he'd be, you know, mid-pack for most of the race and get down to about the last 30, 40 laps, and all of a sudden he'd be up at the front. Well, that nickname kind of takes on a whole new meaning now, doesn't it?
No.
We're just a couple of races away from the playoffs. He's been kind of languishing all season, and all of a sudden, bam, two wins in a row.
Yeah, delivers big at Richmond in the Federated Auto Parts 400. So Kevin Harvick takes the checkered flag, followed by Christopher Bell and Chris Buescher, Denny Hamlin and Chase Elliott, your top five at the Federated Auto Parts 400. But yeah, Kevin Harvick, who looked like, you said, you know, a couple weeks ago, we were talking about it, you know, Harvick might be on the outside looking in when it comes to playoffs. Mm-hmm. Bang, Kevin Harvick on cue delivers with a couple of big wins.
Yeah, he probably would have been on the outside looking in if he hadn't got a win. And, you know, there have been several times this season I'm like, okay, this is the week that the number four is going to put it all together. They're going to, and it just hasn't happened so far. But these last two races, they're definitely back in championship form. So Harvick says, you know, anybody that doubted us doesn't know us. And that's true because this team's got the same crew chief he had. He won the championship back in 2014. So, yeah, definitely watch out for Harvick in the playoffs. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Exactly. What's been the difference the last two races for Harvick and his crew?
It's just been a combination of things. Partly just, you know, they've been making incremental changes. It's getting a little bit better, a little bit better. Partly it's just, you know, getting the brakes. You know, there's everything from the, you know, accidents that happen on track to the way the cautions fall, all, you know, pit strategy, all these kinds of things. It just hasn't broken in their favor, and all of a sudden it's, you know, their diligence is paying off, and they've cashed in a couple of them. It's no fluke, certainly. It's just, you know, what they've been doing all along, and it's just finally coming together for them.
Any surprises when it comes to that race last weekend?
No, I wouldn't say surprises. Looking at Chris Buescher, though, that, you know, he's carrying the banner for RFK, Roush Fenway Keselowski Racing. Brad didn't do too bad, top 15, I think, but Chris Buescher, third place finish. He's been running up there near the front, and you know, he's I don't know about him getting into the playoffs, because he would have to get a win either this week at Watkins Glen or next week at Daytona. But certainly have to feel good about them, you know, going into next year. And Chris Buescher, he's the kind of guy that really hasn't got a lot of respect. He's got one win in Cup. It was a rain-shortened race. So he would love to just snag one, and he's very close to being able to do that.
We're in the garage of NASCAR, Fred, brought to you by Montrose Ford Nissan. I was reading a piece that's on 538 on their website, and it talks about the NASCAR playoff system. And the headline is essentially this, Fred: NASCAR's playoff system is obsessed with winning to a fault. And then they talk about Martin Truex Jr. in this, and about how Truex does not have a win this season, but he's been pretty consistent. How their feeling in this article is that it's all about, you've got to win a race to move on the playoffs. It doesn't reward consistency, top 10 finishes, things like that. That it probably should find a way to reward drivers like Truex, who's been consistent but hasn't won a race yet. I guess, right. Just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, he's sitting fourth in the point standings, but like you said, doesn't have a win this year. And with it hasn't happened before that we've had as many different drivers win races as has happened this year. And we still got two races to go. We could end up with 17 different winners. But, you know, the reason they went to the playoff system in the first place was to reward winning. Consistency, you know, you get somebody like a Mark Martin, or, you know, that, thinking about Matt Kenseth, who won the championship in 2003 and only won one race. They decided, you know, let's just put more of a premium on winning. And I think they have swung it a little too far in the other direction. I don't know. I don't know how you would how you would modify that to make, you know, I mean, obviously the guys who win, you got to reward them for that. But like you said, there's something to be said for consistency too. It's really a shame if Martin Truex were to miss the playoffs after, you know, being so consistent, being top five in the points pretty much all season long, and then not get into the playoffs. So answer is, I guess, well, we'll win a race.
I guess so. I guess that's what Martin Truex is going to have to do, and maybe it'll be Watkins Glen coming up this weekend. And Watkins Glen, this is going to be kind of cool, because this will be the first time in a NASCAR Cup Series race seven different nations will be represented with drivers in this race at Watkins Glen.
I wasn't aware it was that many. I do know Kimi Raikkonen, of course, is very well known in Formula One. He's going to be driving for Trackhouse, part of their Project 91 thing that they're getting going. He's the first driver to actually take part in a race with that. He'll be in the number 91. But seven countries, that's, you know, it's come a long way from back in, say, the 60s when everybody was from Dixie, so to speak.
Exactly.
You know, southeastern United States. It's becoming a lot more international, definitely. And Watkins Glen, you know, it's kind of unique. We have other road courses, but Watkins Glen is so fast, a lot fewer turns. You know, speed is at a premium. And Joey Logano was saying, you know, things are different this year. He's talking about Indianapolis and how rough that was, especially getting into turn one, people just getting beat up. And he says we'll probably see that again. The cars are tougher, you know, with those composite bodies that they have on them. Guys are figuring that out, and it's like, okay, I can smack somebody and still be okay and go on. So it's a lot more of a contact sport now. So that's going to be interesting. Like I said, with the higher speeds at Watkins Glen, we could see some interesting altercations.
I know that Daniel Suarez made the comment about the driver you mentioned from the Formula One circuit, that he's gonna have a tough time dealing with the aggressive driving style that NASCAR has.
That's probably going to be the biggest difference. Yeah, I mean, as far as the car itself, you know, they've then when you have sequential shifters now and all of this, it makes you a little closer to where, you know, you don't get to sit in the middle of the car, of course, although maybe they'll do that for his. But, in Formula One, in open wheel racing, where you just don't touch anybody and you don't block. There's, you know, you get in trouble if you block. So, and of course, in NASCAR, that happens all the time, you know. It's, think about Joey Logano. He blocks everybody.
Sure.
So that's the part, yeah, that he's going to have to get used to. Just stuff it down there in turn one and not be afraid to bounce off somebody.
All right, so let's quickly get to our picks. Fred, go ahead. Who do you like for the Go Bowling at the Glen coming up this weekend?
I believe I like the aforementioned Martin Truex Jr. He's got a couple of wins at the Glen. He hasn't been good. Toyota in general hasn't been good on the road courses this year. It's been their weakness. But his back's against the wall. They, you know, Daytona next week, that's totally up in the air. So if they want to get in, they got to win this week. And I think they'll do it. I think they'll pull it together and get the win.
All right, Buckeye?
I'm going to get with the guy who's already won twice with right turns this year. I'm on Tyler Reddick.
Okay, oh, you took my guy. I was going to go
you
Tyler Reddick.
You can still
Reddick.
Take him.
No. I'm going to pick somebody else. No.
Right, bold.
I'll go Kyle Larson. Kyle Larson, my pick for the Go Bowling at the Glen. And that, of course, is coming up this Sunday. USA TV, by the way, 1 o'clock our time for that race. Hey, Fred, I appreciate it. Thanks for joining us as always.
Do you want our standings?
Okay, very quickly, give us the standings.
All right, with a commanding lead on third, you have 15 points.
Thanks.
Fred picked up a point with a top 10 last week. He's at 22. I picked up a point with a top 10. I'm at 31 Ooh. Points on the season.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Not really. I mean, I think it's great.
I mean, good for you. Good for you. Fred, if it was you, I'd be thrilled. Him, not so much.
thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Fred. We'll talk to you next week, okay?
Okay, bye.
All right, take care. NASCAR Fred joining us this morning, brought to you by Montrose Ford Nissan. All right, we do have a winner today, by the way.
Yes, we do.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the winner of the contest.
It's another winner on the Team Sports Network.
So, Jimmy, correctly identifying the LA Coliseum, he gets your 4-pack of tickets that you had to give away. I also was able to scrape together a 4-pack, and so Patrick, also labeling the Coliseum, he gets those. So, dual winners today.
First race there, 1972.
Nice.
Crowd of 29,290 to watch that first ever Super Bowl of motocross. That's our show. I'll be back tomorrow morning at 7 on the Team.